Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Thursday, May 7th. I'm Olivia Rose. More than 20 people gathered in Petersburg earlier this week for a noise parade and vigil in honor of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Day. As KFSK's Taylor Heckert reports, it was the biggest turnout since Petersburg's local tribe started hosting the event 3 years ago.
A line of cars, plus a fire truck and some police cars, snaked through Petersburg. 9-year-old Sandra Grant was part of the parade and says she knows it's important to show up to an event like this.
I know that's important to us natives, and it's glad, and I'm excited that we get to honor it for me and my family and natives.
On a Sikh, Veronica Ware works for the Petersburg Indian Association and is one of the many at the event with a red handprint over her mouth. It represents the silence that often exists around missing and murdered Indigenous people. She says the entire point of this event is to break that silence.
When people go missing, they say that they ran away so they don't expedite the search for those people, and then they show up murdered. And so it's just really to bring attention and awareness to the fact that this is an underserved population when it comes to our missing and murdered people, and that the system is not doing what it needs to do for those people, and we just want to make sure that there's noise behind it.
Right now, staff at the Petersburg Indian Association don't know of any current missing and murdered Indigenous people cases in Petersburg, but it's still an issue that affects the region and the state. Alaska ranks fourth in the country for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls cases. The parade ended at the Alaska Native Brotherhood John Hanson Senior Hall, where attendees held a candlelight vigil and remembered those who had been lost. Victoria Moore read the description of Tracy Day, a Tlingit woman who went missing in Juneau in 2019.
Last seen wearing a turquoise coat and vest, Tracy has brown hair with bangs. Tracy has blue eyes and dimples on her cheeks. She is missing one of her top front teeth and has a small bump on her cheek from an old injury.
More knew Day. Their children know each other. Day was declared dead by a court last year. Petersburg Indian Association Tribal Administrator Jalen Pomrenke spoke about 19-year-old Kelly Hunt, who went missing in Anchorage in January. Her body was found last month.
That story really hit home for me recently. I feel like there was a lot of coverage on it, and unfortunately, it's one of those situations where, like we talked about, demanding action from our law enforcement to take these cases seriously right off the bat, not after someone's found, not after tragedy strikes, but before. So.
The organizers of the event say they hope it was a way to bring awareness, ask for accountability, and remember those who are missing. In Petersburg, I'm Taylor Heckert.
Kaylin Schneider has a lot of questions about the police investigation into her mother's disappearance. Tracy Day, a Tlingit woman from Juneau, went missing in 2019, and police say there are no suspects or leads. At a presumptive death declaration hearing last year, Day's family planned to ask Juneau police their questions, but the judge didn't let them. So KTOO's Yvonne Crumry asks Juneau police the questions Day's family didn't get to ask.
Tracy Day's daughter, Kaylin Schneider, says a lack of updates, communication, and finally the judge blocking her questions during the hearing make her feel suspicious. And that matches how other loved ones of missing and murdered Indigenous people have felt. Many report being dismissed by law enforcement and the justice system.
When it comes to Native cases, anytime something would pop up, they would be trying to just find the quickest exit instead of the truth.
Juneau police denied KTOO's request to see Day's case files, saying the case is still active. But Juneau Police Chief Craig Campbell sat down with KTOO to answer some of the questions Schneider has had for years. Many are about a specific moment in the investigation, about a year after Day's disappearance. Someone found clothes and Day's bus pass on the side of a mountain. Police told Schneider they called in Sea Dogs, a volunteer nonprofit with trained search dogs. Schneider then received an email with a photo. It showed a search dog sitting next to a pile of large rocks with a makeshift cross in it. The email was from then JPD Detective Patrick Taylor, who was leading the case.
They said the dog alerted them to the
grave. And then later when I was like, so why didn't you dig it up? They were like, oh, the dog actually didn't alert us. We set the dog up for the photo. That's weird. Why? What? Like, that makes no sense.
In one email, Taylor first says the dog alerted its handlers to the area and referred to a, quote, quasi-grave marker thing. In another email, he corrected himself. The dog actually did not alert to anything in the area. Schneider wants to know why the site wasn't investigated further, but Taylor is no longer with the department. Juneau Police Deputy Chief Campbell says the clothes were found a distance away from the site with the cross, and since the dog didn't actually alert to it, the department didn't investigate further.
There doesn't seem to be a reason just to start digging in places, and that's probably why they didn't do anything.
Day's family also has questions about a man Day was romantically involved with, like if the police considered him a suspect and if his property was searched. Campbell said JPD spoke with the man, but no suspects in the case panned out in any meaningful way.
They all had, let's say, alibis, whether in town, out of town. They had no animosity or will to Tracy. Like, there just didn't seem like a valid reason. I need to get evidence to show he did it. I need to find evidence. I need people to say, like, yep, he told me this, or, you know, and stuff like that, or I saw this.
Schneider says the family did send JPD a recording of a call they had with the man, which was later also shared with KTOO. In it, the man said he and Day would fight often and violently. One time he said he hit her over the side of the head with a boat oar and, quote, she woke up the next day with a big lump on the side of her head, unquote. That was around the time that Day disappeared. Campbell said the recording wasn't mentioned in reports in Day's file. He said he would look into it after KTOO asked follow-up questions. The man in the recording died in 2021. Lastly, Schneider wants to know what police are doing now with her mother's case.
Why they won't let us look at the evidence. And they claim that it's because it's an active investigation, but then there's no officer assigned. So why is that?
Campbell said JPD checks in on open and active cases annually to see if the person has been seen somewhere else in the United States.
But it doesn't mean that someone is knocking on doors and trying to, like, generate leads. But we do always, when a case is inactive or inactive, you know, case could be closed and no one's touching it for years. If you get information like, hey, XYZ, we heard this, we would open it up and look into it.
He said JPD is in the process of reviewing its policies for missing people. One part he wants to work on is communicating with families. Schneider said she's felt brushed off by police since her mom disappeared, but she isn't going to let it stop her from bringing attention to Day's case.
I don't think they realize how beloved my mother was. I don't think they realize how many people are angry that she's missing and that there are no leads, there's nothing. I think that they believed she would just be forgotten. And they're absolutely wrong. Like, we will never let this go.
In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
And a quick note, the KTOO story we aired on Tuesday about Tracy Day and missing persons death declarations misstated where Rebecca Coford works. Coford works for the Alaska court system. Lawmakers in the Alaska House unveiled their first draft of the state's capital budget on Monday. It adds about $100 million in spending to the roughly $250 million capital budget that passed the Senate last month. Most of the added items focus on shoring up schools and university facilities around the state. Representative Calvin Schroggy, an Anchorage independent who co-chairs the House Finance Committee, says the House's approach to an unexpected influx of war-related oil revenue mirrors the Senate's.
To the extent we have surplus revenues this year, we want to make sure that we're directing those towards really addressing our huge backlog in deferred maintenance across the state.
More than half of the House's additions would go towards K-12 schools across the state, including repairs to Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka and the construction of a new school in the Northwest Arctic community of Deering. The House's capital budget also includes $9 million in funding for 9 renewable energy projects around the state, and it would set aside $15 to $25 million in funding for upgrades to the Port of Alaska in Anchorage, depending on oil prices. The new draft also removes the state's authorization to receive roughly $135 million in federal funding for 2 controversial transportation projects, the Cascade Point Ferry Terminal in Juneau and the West Susitna Access Road in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Both projects have been the subject of intense criticism, but removing the West Susitna project from the state's capital budget drew pushback from Republican lawmakers, including Fairbanks Republican Will Stott.
The West Sioux Access Project is one of the few things that we have in Alaska that is going toward positive steps for resource development. We're a resource development state.
The House Finance Committee is scheduled to consider amendments today and tomorrow, and Schroege says he expects the bill to head to the House floor next week. A bill that aims to bring stability to the school budgeting process made its way out of the House Finance Committee Tuesday. The bill is essentially the same as when the committee first considered it last month, but that could still change in the final weeks of the legislative session. KTOO's Jamie Deep reports.
Calculating school funding is complicated. It's currently based on enrollment projections, which can create uncertainty in a school district's budgeting process. House Bill 261 would allow districts to use known numbers instead of projections to build budgets. In the bill, districts could use enrollment numbers from the previous year or a three-year average of prior years. But if the district's count in the current year is at least 5% greater than the other options, that can be used instead. On top of that, districts could have options for how to count students who receive intensive services, such as students who need multiple services to help with communication and motor skills. The bill would ensure all students are accounted for when determining funding. Ketchikan Republican Representative Jeremy Bynum attempted to simplify the options by only requiring a three-year average be used across the board. He says taking an average gives districts predictability while placing the responsibility on them to plan for changing enrollments.
So in years that they have lower counts, they're getting more money. And in years they have higher counts, they might be getting just a little bit less. But ultimately, they still have a fund balance that they're able to absorb those.
Representative Elise Galvin, an Anchorage independent, opposed the amendment. She said school districts are legally required to provide intensive services for students who need them, and taking an average won't work for them. Those students get 13 times the funding of other students in the state's funding formula.
So if we're smoothing out, and in some years we have over and some a little under, I guess that's where I do draw the line, because we have legal responsibilities that absolutely cannot be underfunded when it comes to our intensive needs students.
Representative Andy Story, a Juneau Democrat and the bill's sponsor, says districts with growing enrollments should be able to have the opportunity to receive the funding to serve incoming students.
If their district was showing an upturn, they didn't want to have to wait to have that accounted. They wanted to be able to make sure that our formula adjusted for what they saw as a bright spot, and wanted to make those students and families have those resources.
Lawmakers narrowly rejected the amendment in a 6-5 vote. According to the most recent fiscal notes, the bill is expected to cost more than $113 million. Most districts are estimated to receive more funding. Bynum says he wants to see more specific modeling on how the school districts will be affected.
I don't believe that we've done the necessary work that we need to do for this complex bill, but I will be I won't be getting in the way for us to continue moving the ball forward on it.
After the committee meeting, Story, the bill's sponsor, said she's working to get more specific data and that it will be presented as the bill moves through the legislative process. The bill was referred to the House Rules Committee on Wednesday. The committee has not met yet this year. The regular session is scheduled to end on May 20th. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.